If you want to learn how a 16-year-old dropout former bricklayer is now hanging out with Elon Musk and Richard Branson, listen on, everyone. Hello, everybody. My name is Gino Barbaro. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Jake and Gino Show, and I'm flying solo today. My partner is in Disney. I don't know what possessed him to go to Disney, everybody. We just had an MM5, amazing event. And you know what? Sucks for him because he's missing this week's guest. I got him all to myself. And I want to really intro this guest by sharing a story of his first book. He wrote Blue Fishing was his first book. And now I've got Go for Stupid for the second book. So what I want everyone to do is picture and imagine a young 16-year-old in Ireland with a bunch of bricks on his back, and he just got kicked out of school, and he's going up this ladder. And as he's going up the ladder, he sees his father, his uncle, his cousin, and his grandfather. And he stops and he says to his grandfather, "Grandpa, I'm here. What do you think? You know, what's life like?" And to me, I think grandfather looks at Steve Sims and he says, "If you don't quit now, you're going to be here forever. You're seeing your life flash in front of your eyes." And I can't put words in Steve's mouth right now. I'm going to let him continue the story, but that must have hit him really hard as a young 16-year-old. He must have said, "I got to get the hell out of here and start my life." And he's an incredible individual, just a regular guy, but what he's been able to build and his life story and the wisdom that he's accumulated through the years, putting it in this book, Go for Stupid, it's just a testament to what he's done. So, Steve, welcome to the show. And if you want to continue that story along, I'd love to hear it.
I had no idea you were going to hit it so hard and fast. That was, you know, we all say, "Oh, what was a pivotal moment in your life?" And for many people, they have many pivotal moments. That was probably the biggest thing that changed trajectory of me. To be 100% exact with what he said that I will never, ever be able to forget, your lead up was very accurate. But he actually said to me, "Son, if you don't quit today, you'll be me tomorrow." That was his exact words. Very few words. Can't get it wrong. And you're right. I quit that day and I went off on a journey to try and find myself. And here's the funny thing. You know, we can name drop Elon Musk and Elton John and anyone you like, but I'm the exact same as every other person listening to this. I was aggravated where I was. I couldn't understand why I didn't have money. I didn't have opportunities. So I went out on a journey to try and find those. And of course, to be able to find opportunity, you've got to realize there's 1,000 jobs that you really can't do. In fact, I learned the words "you're fired" pretty frequently until I realized that I was never meant to work for somebody else and designed my own business. Again, not trying to. I'd love to sit here and go, "Well, you know, I did an analysis on the market and the billion." No, I just thought, well, hang on a minute. If I can help this person that's got money, if I can help him, he'll talk to me and give me advice. And that was it. My business, I always said, was a Trojan horse. I would help you over here as long as I could converse with you over here. And it went into a 25-year history, as you know, as being concierge to the richest people in the planet. But I never wanted to walk red carpets. You know me. You know, black T-shirt and jeans and a motorbike and maybe too many whiskeys. I don't want to be strutting around some bloody black tie gala. I want to have a conversation with Warren Buffett, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Jean-Paul DeJoria. That's what I want. Because then when they tell me something, I can go, "All right, now I'm going to do it." And as you know, I put most of it in the two books.
Before we get into Go for Stupid and I start asking you questions, there's some storyline that you really need to share with the listeners as far as becoming a bouncer. What did you learn from that? The psychology of people and how that actually catapulted you into your career right now? Because I know there's the metaphor of being a bouncer. You're controlling the room. You're controlling the door. And you're letting people into your life, into your mind, and even into that room. There's that metaphor that I loved. Who do you allow in the room? I'm asking everyone who's listening to this. This is a really important story. Are you allowing the negativity? Are you allowing the people that are going to bring you down? Or are you allowing the people that are going to really be uplifting to your life? Can you share that story with us?
Yeah, I had a buddy that really put it into context later on in life. Dr. Sean Stevenson said, you got to look at every situation and ask yourself this. Was it done to you or was it done for you? And the acceptance of either one of those choices determines how you read that situation. And when I was trying to find a job that would associate me with loads of wealthy people, I tried stockbroking, yacht charters, jet charters, so many things, got fired from them all. I ended up being a doorman of a nightclub. Now, I'm a big, thick, ugly fella, so I can look scary if I need to. And I'm now on the door of a nightclub with a couple of other meatheads who basically just wanted to save as much blood from their shirt as they could and score the hot girls. Now, I'm married, been married forever, so I had no interest in this. I just had to make money. But when you analyze that statement, was this done to me or for me, I suddenly went, well, hang on a minute. How can I make this moment be for me? You know, how can it be a benefit being on the front door of a nightclub? And I suddenly realized I had a front row seat to human psychology, body language, interaction. You know, we all know rich people, you know, can look almost poor. You know, they strut around and they're just like easygoing people because the richest people today used to be poor. And you also get those people that pretend they're rich and they're the king pricks, aren't they? They're like, look at me, I've got so much money. And you know they haven't. They haven't got a pot to piss in and everything's borrowed. So I got to be able to see all of this. And all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, the education. And then it hit me. I used to play this game. I would be on the door. A couple of guys are walking towards me. And I'd be like, okay, check out that body language, their interaction, the side glances. Are these two guys that have got a bit too many sherbets in them and they just want to cause trouble inside? And the worst offenders were the girls. The girls that wanted to maybe were a little bit bitchy that night and wanted to get a bunch of guys just fighting inside. If you could recognize that and stop them coming through your front door, you reduce the punch-ups on the inside. Now, fast forward, whether you're a coach, whether you're a plumber, whether you're whatever business you're in, realtor, investor, if you control the front door of who you let on into the inside, you remove 99% of the problems. Because trust me, checkbooks are not a dictator as how big a prick the person can be. You know, arseholes don't get better with age. Protect the people you allow into the room and you will control your enthusiasm, your energy, and also the people in the room. Everyone's happy.
At this week's event, Luke Wren said it best. Money is just a magnifier. If you're an asshole without money, you're just going to be a bigger asshole with money. That's the reality. And I love the fact that you said that, you know, I say it as a metaphor, letting people or things into your mind. If you can remove all of that and create the positivity, that's really important. Now, go for stupid. Define for our listeners what go for stupid means.
So there's a word I hate. It's my Voldemort word. And the word is impossible. How many times do you hear people going, hey, I'm going to go for the impossible. I'm going to make the impossible possible. Impossible stands for I'm possible. That's just flopping up a bullshit word. Get it out of your vocabulary. Don't recognize it. Don't give power to it. Don't give an excuse to it. So when people used to come to me and they'd be like, look, I'm not going to do this with my business. Okay. How can we make that goal stupid? You know, oh, I've got trouble here with my marketing. Okay, what's the stupid option we got here? Now, here was the thing. By making it stupid, there's this smile that comes into your head. I'm going to take this, and one of my classics, people know this. I had a client ask me once if he wanted a dining experience in Florence. So I went, okay, how can we make that request stupid? We took over the Accademia de Galleria, set up a table of six at the feet of Michelangelo's David, and then had Andrea Bocelli come in and serenade him during his pasta. We made his request stupid. And here's the thing. When you make something stupid, childlike curiosity comes in. And you suddenly go, oh, how can I make this fantastical? How can I make this ridiculous? And the key here, how can I make this so much out there that my goal will be laughable to others? And there's the key. You see, in today's planet, you hear this example where people go, hey, what would you do today if you knew you couldn't fail? Well, let's be serious. How many times have you failed, not in your life, in the past year? You know?
Every day. You should have seen our registration for MM5. We had 1,000 people, half of them to get registered. I started 40 minutes late. Did anybody know by 12 o'clock they were having an amazing time? No, we went for stupid because we went for 1,200 people. We sold it and we made a ton of mistakes. So it's just a learning lesson. I look back at it as an opportunity to do a better job next time.
Just imagine if you did that event and you didn't learn anything. Wouldn't that be horrible?
Huh. Absolutely.
And here's the thing. So no one's frightened of failing. Any smart person in the planet realizes that the education is in the failure. Okay. And now you've got all of this education to make what was a great event even better for next year. But here's the thing today. Today, we're not frightened of failing. Today, we're frightened of being laughed at. But everyone in the planet that we revere, we admire, the Steve Jobs, the Warren Buffetts, the Elon Musks, the Larry Pages, the Richard Bransons, all of those people had stupid goals and we revere them. We idolize them. But when our buddy's sitting in the coffee shop and says, hey, I'm going to do an event and I'm going to have 1,200 people. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to have 1,200 people. People look at you and you go, don't be silly. You know, you should try it with 50 foot. And they try to scale you down. You've got to start with a stupid goal. If people aren't mocking and laughing at you, it ain't big enough. And then you've got to go it and look at the look in their eyes when you achieve it. So quite simply, today's world, we've got to go for stupid. And I felt that it was time to write the book, Go for Stupid, The Art of Achieving Ridiculous Goals, because I want to start a movement. I want people to stop going for what they can achieve, stop for what they think is possible, and go for what stretches them. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you want to make 100 grand extra a month, go for 500 and fail and make an extra 250. You know, push yourself.
Let me share with you this weekend what I did by pushing myself. I'm going to go for stupid for Steve right now on the show. I sang Bocelli's song, Con te partirò, paesi che non ho mai veduto e vissuto con te. So I sang in front of 300 people. Never sang an opera song before. I've only been singing for a year. I'm an Italian. Italians are supposed to know how to sing. I didn't know until a year ago. And that was me going for stupid, and I did a pretty good job. And Vanilla Ice followed that. So can you imagine? I had a lot of pressure on me singing in front of my peer group, my community. And I think a lot of people had admiration for that. People were crying. My mom was there. She was singing. And that to me is, I never would have done that 10 years ago. But I read the book, and that so resonated with me. And you said, before they will laugh at you, before they applaud. So I'm sure people were laughing at me, hearing me the first couple of times I sang. Wasn't that good, but I put in the reps, put in the work. I'm going to get better. And for me, it was a pivotal moment in my life, because I'm like, if I can do that, anybody can go out and buy a piece of real estate, because singing is the hardest thing you could possibly do, because you can't see it. You can hear it. You feel really nervous about hearing your own voice. It's performance. It's so many things going on. And I went for stupid, and I think I did a pretty stupid job at it. I did a pretty good job. So
congratulations. Congratulations. Yeah. That takes balls, and I'm positive there were people around going, oh my God, is he really going to do this? But who did it? That's the key. You did it. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. That's also my favorite tune, by the way. So congratulations.
I got to send it over to you. When I get off the thing, I'll send you the thing on Facebook. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It was one of those things, like my kids are like, Dad, who are you now? And I want to share this with everybody, because why did I wait so long to do something like this? I don't know why. I should have gone for stupid a lot sooner in my life. And why are we in such a gotcha world? Why are we living in that world where everyone says gotcha? And they're looking at people. You had a great story in the book where this lady was walking with her bags and she fell and hit her face. And she's worried about if people saw and recorded that instead of almost getting fractures and all. Do you have any ideas on why that is?
Okay. So there's a couple of things here. We're in a gotcha society. And we're in a cancel culture society, and it's getting word. It's a cancer. You see, here's the situation. Before COVID, We were outsourcing all of our announcements to social pages. You know, you had a baby, all this kind of, you threw it up on Facebook and you got pissed off if you didn't get a million likes by 5 o'clock. Then COVID hit. And what was the standard cry during COVID? Oh, I can't connect with my friends. I can't hang out. I can't communicate anymore. I want to be with all of my mates. But what did we do during that same time? We started attacking each other. Mm-hmm. And we came up with the gotcha society and then the cancel culture. Let's find something that you did in 1985, ridicule you for it, and cancel your business. Let's make sure you never work again. We actually became an Olympic sport of literally dragging down statues, you know? And we pride ourselves now. Oh, we tore that statue down. Why? You know, why can't we understand? Why can't we learn? Why can't we grow? We need to connect. And I actually thought at the beginning, it's the media. I actually joined the herd and I went, the problem today is media. Media is a platform, okay? It's like a shovel. You can dig a hole or you can hit someone with it. You can do whatever you want to do with media. Media is not the problem. How you react and interact with it, that's the problem. And I actually looked into this book, and there's chapters in there. You know this. I looked over Kodak, Henry Ford, Edison, coffee, all of these things that today we couldn't live without, that were literally scoffed at back then, and even protests not to have it developed. But they went for stupid goals. And today we would much rather mock someone. I'm going to give you a story that's not in the book. You tell the story. You mentioned about the large lady with the bags. Mm-hmm. I'll leave that for readers with the book or to grab the book. But I'm going to give you another example that I think a lot more people will understand. Let me ask you this. Do you have a truck?
I do.
What truck do you have?
Well, I have a G-Wagon Mercedes.
You have a, okay, but that's not really a truck, is it? Okay. You have a G-Wagon, but you know, did you want a truck?
Not really.
You don't. Okay. So you don't fancy trading in the G-Wagon for a truck?
No.
All right. Okay. Did you see Elon Musk when he unveiled the Cybertruck?
Yes, I did.
All right. So let me just get this right. You don't have an interest in a truck, but you watch the unveiling of his truck. Mm-hmm. So he gained the attention of people that don't even want his product. All right. In that night, he opened up slots for you to be able to put down a healthy deposit so you could be first in line to purchase the truck. He sold out all slots that night, and only now is he building the manufacturing plant to actually build it. So let's break this down. He got the attention of not just you that has no interest in buying a truck, of the planet. He sold out of every slot he had 2 years before he even started manufacturing it. But what was the news about that reveal that popped up on the newspapers and they've where the following day?
They crucified him as far as the truck breaking and the bullet, the glass and all that. They laughed at him. That's what they did. Exactly.
They laughed at him because his bulletproof glass didn't work. Now, I don't know about you, fella, but if bulletproof glass is high on your spec requirements for a vehicle, you don't need that vehicle. You need to move.
You need a tank.
Yeah, you need to get the fuck out of there. So the point is, rather than us revering him for actually building something that A, got the attention of even people that had no interest in us, and B, completely, wouldn't you like to sell out of a product before you'd even built it? I know I would. I know everyone would. But we felt it was much more comfortable to mock and jeer him. That's the society we're in. He doesn't care because he can't hear it. So I actually thought we need to be able to focus on us, ourselves, at our level, going for stupid goals so we can be the next people that have revered. That was a very, very sad case in human interaction, but it's nothing new. So we need to recognize it and then change it. We need to support before we jeer.
You may not be able to answer this question, but how do you, like, even for myself, how did I get up on stage and get over that fear of being mocked in the gotcha world? It may seem like only 3 or 4 or 5% of the population, and most of them are listening to the show right now, but how do you get over that? How would you get over something like that?
I know how you got over it. I know how I got over it. And I know how everyone can get over it. And I'm glad you asked that question. We're all scared. We all have fear. But let me ask this question. What is more frightening? Taking the shot or knowing that you never did? You see, someone said to me before, the definition of hell is to meet the man or woman that you could have been. Now, I'm scared. I'm scared about going up on stage. You know me, I speak on a lot of stages all over the planet. I actually get nervous. I throw the headphones in. I throw some Pearl Jam in, some Metallica, whatever. I get myself all weird up. For me, I could easily walk away from that stage. Financially, I could easily walk away from that stage and go, I'm not doing those stages anymore. But every time I get on stage, I get to change someone in that room. I get to change the way they're working, which will bleed into the workers that work with them, into their families. I get to generate impact. Am I scared of walking up on that stage? Or am I terrified of not actually impacting those people? Fear exists. Don't try to ignore it, but learn how to control it. Don't be frightened of actually taking that chance. Be frightened of not, and in a month's time going, why didn't I sing on that stage? Hey, it's my stage. I've got a good voice. Yeah, maybe I'm not Andrea, but hey, I need to do what I need to do for my growth.
I love that answer. 100%. Yeah, let's get back to this book, because once again, go for stupid in here. I love the story about I think it's the Amazonification, you called it.
Yeah.
Your son, and this is for all business owners out there.
Yeah.
If you're selling a transaction and you're not creating an experience like Steve does with the concierge parties and with the media and all that, you're just a transaction. You're going to lose. Can you share the story of your son buying those chinos? Because I think that's just light bulb went off on me when I read that. I'm like, oh, that just.
And I'm glad you actually brought the chino story up, because I don't want people out there going, well, God, I can't take over a museum or get Elton John to teach you piano. That's fine. The experience you have to create today in your business is one of connection. If you don't have that connection and you don't have that communication, there's no experience. And as you said, quite simply, you become an Amazon transaction, okay? My son wanted a pair of chinos. I had these chinos. I loved my chinos. I said to him, this is where you buy chinos online. By the way, they're even in a sale. You can buy them for like $50. Yeah, but I want to go to this store. So we jumped on the bike. We went down to a very large jean store in LA called American Rag and Sea. And it's a really cool hipster kind of joint. It's got jeans and chinos from just all over the planet. And the guy was actually, well, look at your body size and look at your build and blah. He's not like me. He's not like a fat bastard like I am. My son's all lean and, you know, he's looking good. So the guy's kind of like chatting with him. You know, what are they for? Are they smart? Are they can? There's a conversation. Now, of course, I'm watching this because I know the game and I'm watching how the interaction's going and I'm seeing the connection. And I'm seeing these two getting aligned in the conversation. And he throws a whole bunch of different jeans and chinos at him, and he finds these chinos and he loves them. And he comes out, he says, I'm having these. And I said to him, okay, fine. So he went up to the counter and he bought them. We're just headed back to the bike. And he wanted to stick them in one of my side bags. And I looked at the label of these chinos, and I'm like, they're the exact brand, not only the exact brand, the exact style number that I told you was available. And I went, how much did you pay for them? He looked over. He didn't get the sale price. He paid full whack for these trousers. And I went, you could have got these for half price. He said, yeah, but then I wouldn't have got that. And that was the thing. He was actually very, very happy that he paid overprice, because he got to compare. He got to be able to make an educated decision. And he had quite the way he said it, I wouldn't have had that. It was just absolutely beautiful. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Fair enough. Good. I understand now. So you've got to be able to communicate. If you're not communicating with your clients, you're not developing loyalty. You're not developing a connection. And the biggest R word in the planet, you're not developing a relationship. Now, all of those things I've mentioned, do you have that with Amazon? You know, ask yourself, tomorrow morning, phone up Amazon and go, hey, I'll be using this toilet roll, but I don't want this toilet roll anymore. Which one shall I buy? Who are you going to contact? Where do you go? Exactly. You ain't having that conversation because Amazon doesn't want a relationship with you. It wants a transaction. And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But understand what role you're playing. And as human beings and as business owners, we need the R. We need that relationship because that's what's going to give us that's what's going to keep us in business. And also, you don't need loyalty points when you have a relationship.
Do you mind if I share the story this weekend that we had at the event about?
Please.
So we had the event 9 to 5. At 6 o'clock, we had the VIP dinner. VIPers were excited because all of a sudden they were able to go to the Vanilla Ice and Gino concert at 8 p.m. That was only for the Jake and Gino community, mentorship students. So there was about 200 people there plus the VIPers. I get on stage. I sing. The Vanilla Ice comes on. He does his thing. Demographic wise, people brought back to their childhood and getting drinks. And then all of a sudden they're taking selfies with Vanilla Ice. And they're like, I can't believe, Gino, you and Jake pour back into the community like this. We created an experience. And for the people who didn't come this year, they saw the pictures. We're going to go bigger next year. They're going to like, I'm coming next year. And to see a dad with his 16-year-old daughter dancing with Vanilla Ice and taking pictures, you can't get that on Amazon. You can't get that anywhere. We created a connection. Is it a lot of work? Absolutely. But for me, I want to be in business and I want to create those experiences for my community. And I want to be part of those experiences. So you don't have to be Steve Sims taking your son to buy chinos or Gino spending money on Vanilla Ice. That may be a little extreme, but you can still create relationships and create opportunities for people who are, you know, who are your customers.
In 5 years' time, is anyone in that room going to talk about the price tag of that ticket? Or are they going to talk about jamming out with you singing Bocelli and Vanilla Ice?
That's a great point. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. I freaking love that, man. So many more things I want to get in this book. Next question, 3 keys to a successful mindset. This is really important. You got value, curiosity, and time. That's how you say successful become really, really important. Can you dive into those three for me?
Absolutely. At the moment, we are in a, I don't know, what do we call it? Recession, depression, retraction, adjustment. We don't know, but we are in a distortion and distraction, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of noise coming at us. And a lot of people get really, really scared at the moment because they're, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to hold on to my money. When anybody ever discusses with you the price tag, just like your event, okay? Whenever anyone discusses the price tag is because you failed to establish the value. Now, your event was overpouring in value. You can't measure it. How the hell could I meet Vanilla Ice? How the hell could I hang with you at the VIP lounge and other people that are aggravated to be better? That's beyond the price tag. That's pure value. No one, I would imagine most people can't actually remember the price tag.
Okay, it's funny,
I've always said, if you can walk through your kitchen, walk through your cupboard, walk through your jewelry drawer, and if you can look at something and go, oh, that cost me $1,200 or that cost me $400. If you can remember the price tag, it's because they failed to become a value. You know, I have no idea how much my watch was because I've worn it forever. I've had it forever. I love it. It's got a story. It's transcended beyond the price tag. So value is key today. Focus on the value. Never focus on the price tag. And like you, and you gave a beautiful example, you want your clients to feel as though they got more than they paid for and almost ripped you off. You want them to walk away going, my God, I got 10 grand out of that price ticket. You know, I'm not going to say anything in case Gino sends me an invoice, you know, but that's what you want. You want people to go, like you said, how could you do so much for what I paid so little for? You know, because what you were doing was you were focusing on, and it's very easy. I know you guys, you were focusing on triggers. You were focusing on adjustment. You were focusing, saturating them with an experience, a night, a commitment, a community. You were focusing on all that. Hey, the payment, well, that was just a fuel to get the car going. You know, it wasn't your first line of defense. So you were focusing quite heavily in your event on the value. Anyone listening to this, how much value do you have in what you offer? That's what you've got to focus on. Curiosity is, as Gino does, how can I make this better? How can I do this? Oh, and again, think of a five-year-old child. What can I do to make this fun? You know, how can I dream? I'm in my garden. It's a boring garden, but not when I pretend that it's a jungle. And I imagine and I design and I create. Is that childlike curiosity? Think of Elon Musk, okay? I want to go up into space, but it's bloody expensive. How can I make it cheaper? What's the most expensive thing? And this is a true story. What's the most expensive thing about a rocket? It's those bloody great fuel cells. Because it's only the top tip that actually goes up into space. Those fuel cells, they get you up there, and then they become space junk. What about if we get them back, refuel them, bolt them on again, and send them up again? Well, we'll save tens of millions of dollars. Then we'll do that. By having that curiosity to come up with a result, now all you have to do is reverse engineer to actually make it happen. You've already got the end goal. Bring them down, bolt them on, send them up again. And he's been doing that for, what, the last 30 to 50 to 100 flights?
And he failed in the beginning, though, Steve, correct? I mean, people are laughing at him. He missed and he kept – the specs and the way you have to do it, it's not an easy thing to do, or else NASA probably would have done it. But people made fun of him and laughed at him as well for that as well, correct?
And when was the last time you saw it fall over and explode?
Mm-hmm. You haven't.
Mm-hmm. You haven't. Why? Because it works. You know, how many rockets has been up there in the last year? 30, 40? And every single one of those, that fuel cells landed dead on that thing. Because again, as it's falling over and everyone's sitting there, we, you know, with our, that beer, with our feet up in their lazy boy chair, laughing at him, he's looking at where it went wrong so he can make sure it doesn't the next time. You see, they'll only laugh at you until they applaud. Okay? It's only got to get right once. That's all that matters. You've only got to get it right once. And then all the rest of the priors, hey, that was education. But it's that childlike curiosity, which I think today is really something we've got to harness on. We've got to focus on the value because the end client is everything. They're the lifeblood. They're our air. They're our kidneys. They're everything. Without a client, you ain't got a business. So that's important. The curiosity to how to make it fun, engaging, beneficial, that's got to stay there. And of course, the last one I think you mentioned was impact, wasn't it?
Time. Was the, yes.
Time was the beautiful thing. We can make more money. We can create more impact. But we can't create more time. So knowing that you are on a defined hour, 60 minutes in that hour, what can you do with it? How can you make it benefit somebody else in order for it to benefit you? And it's got to be in that order. So you've really got to focus on those elements of your value, your curiosity, and your time, and value them accordingly. And you talked about earlier about the amplification of money and not having any. COVID was a great amplifier. If you had a shaky business, COVID wrecked it. If you had a shaky relationship at home, COVID showed you it was shaky. But all the successful people in the planet, they were now given more time. They didn't have to travel anywhere. Anyone they wanted to communicate with wasn't going anywhere, so they knew they could have that conversation. COVID was a fantastic period for so many people. Yes, I know there are people that were in pain, and I fear for you. I'm sorry about that. But for most people that took time to benefit from those 2.5 years, they've come out of the gate screaming, you know, with twin turbos. Congratulations for those people that took the chance.
I love that. Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors because we're going to go to the personal growth and really dive into these books a little bit more. So okay. Let's take that quick time out. Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
Okay, we're back. Now, Jake would normally take over this part of the show, but he's probably in Magic Kingdom doing some stupid ride that he probably doesn't want to be at because it's 82 degrees out there and he's missing Steve Sims. Sorry, Jake. Miss you, bro, but this has been thoroughly enjoying. I love talking to Steve about this stuff. You've done so many things. Can you share the other different businesses you have? And can you let me know where you find the time and how do you find the time to do all of it?
I'm an aggravated individual. I also realize that
why you like me, because I'm just as aggravating as you, probably more aggravating than you. So
neither of us know if tomorrow is coming. We really don't know. For every day that we wake up and we're above dirt is a good day. Okay. So I want to be able to develop that impact and write in the books. I want people to do more with their life. And then a lot of people are like, well, how do I do that? Well, I coach a lot because I want to be able to get in there and, you know, kick the crap out of someone to get them to do more. I love doing speaking events. They all interlock. I'm trying to create the impact. If you don't know how to create the impact with your company, hey, me and my son have Sims.media. We show you how to create that impact. Redefine your brand. Remove the confusion from your business and expose the clarity of what you are the solution for. So everything kind of interlocks. But my real goal is to get people to go for more, whether it be in the branding, the coaching, the speaking, and actually sit there and go, well, hang on a minute. If this bricklayer from London can do it, I'm already out of excuses. You know, if Gino can jump up on stage and sing Bocelli, why the shit can't I try something different? You know, we want to be able to propel people to just stand up and go, all right, now's my time. And that's what I'm trying to do. Whatever businesses I need to create along the way in order to help that happen, I'm here for it.
And Steve, you started out with one and you've been able to scale. What habits or what things have you done to be able to do that? It's like having, for me, I have six children. So the very first one was really stressful. The second one, a little less. Yep. The third one, even less. The fourth one, you're getting into the groove of it. And I think it's just a long game. It's long-termism, planning for the future, and then getting really good at something, growing the team. But you didn't start with media and books and coaching and speakeasies and blah. But how did you build that muscle? How did you get all of these skills?
It's funny you say that. It's usually by discovery. When the first book, Blue Fishing, came out, I thought it was a one and done. I really thought, great, nice book. I poured my guts into it. And this is a key thing. I got paid incredibly well to write that first book. Now, that's a very important factor, because when you are not paid to write the book, you write the book to sell the book. When you're paid to write the book, hey, you can write whatever the shit you want, you know? You haven't got to dilute it. You can call it as it is. So I got the chance to actually put all of my thoughts and gibberish into that first book. And I went, right, that's me, unapologetically. Hope it helps you. In fact, I pray it helps you. Go do something with it. And then I got people going, hey, I don't know how to do this. Well, you just do this. Well, can you coach me? Okay. Hey, I've got an event. Can you speak? And I'd spoken at events on the luxury travel industries before, but never on entrepreneurship. And here was the thing. I thought this book was the biggest waste of money ever. Because the book, you've read it, it's so simple. Go for stupid. It's so simple. Then why is 99% of the planet literally deciding not to do the simple stuff and spend 30 grand on this advertising campaign that doesn't work rather than sending out postcards from a hotel? You know, know your number of clients, focus on your Amazonification, focus on relationships. People will avoid all of that, but they'll spend money on doing an Instagram ad. And I couldn't understand it. So as people were coming to me going, hey, I suddenly was revealed that people don't do the simple shit. Now, I've worked for some of the biggest companies, luxury brands in the planet, from major award shows to major jewelry to major automotive companies. I've worked for these companies, and I've gone in there where they've had branding departments that have all come from Yale or Harvard, and they've done it like this because that's the way it's always been done. And I've come in and I've gone, well, why? You know, why is it? And that's my key word, why? And then I've got aggravated that you're doing this because you always did it. Nothing we did 10 years ago is relevant today. In fact, quite simply, nothing we did 2 years ago is relevant today. Everything is constantly changing on the way we view things, changing on the media. Like I did, I was the keynote speaker for Traffic and Conversion, you know, the largest marketing and branding summit in the planet. I think September this year. And I thought to myself, me? Why me? And then when I started looking into it, it was because I see a lot of the people are still singing the same song, but the lyrics have changed. And I remember a couple of years ago seeing someone talking about, you know, websites and branding on desktop. 85% of the planet today consumes all of that media from this little phone. Gives a shit what it looks like on the desktop. Make sure it looks good here, because 85% of the planet uses this. So I think it was part aggravation, part annoyance, and then the revelation that, hey, it's not hard. You've just chosen to make it hard. And all of those things combined just got me into different realms, and people loved it and latched on. And we, you know, we literally have a very successful branding company, not marketing, branding company at Sims.media. And we focus on clarification, we focus on coaching, and we do events. And it's really been people that have just said to me, how do we do that? And I've gone, well, if you want to do it, I'll do it with you. And that's how I've helped. And that's how I've grown.
What I love about the book, there's so many stories in the book. So if you read the book, whoever's listening to this, and you're like, I didn't really learn anything, you'll be entertained just by the stories about walking through Elon Musk's battery plant. Or the one that really stuck with me, I have two other really important questions that I need to get to. The first one is, the gentleman there says, you know, how did you pull it off? How did you pull it off? And all you did is you asked. It's amazing how, just go through that story. Some of us sometimes don't ask. We're afraid to ask. And you'd be amazed when you ask somebody for something. People will want to help, especially reciprocity, especially if you've done something for them. Can you share that story with us?
Yeah. People know that I set up a dinner for six at the feet of Michelangelo's David and had Andrea Bocelli come in. What they don't know was the pivotal lesson I got out of it afterwards. Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand. It suddenly hit me. I pulled this off. I got this. I got that. So how did it? So there's, I won't ruin the story in the book. To get the full effect, read the book. And if you don't like it, phone me up. I'll send you your money back. There you go. I said it. But I actually spoke to someone at the event and I was perplexed. And I went, and I was being a bit arrogant, to be honest with you. How come I managed to pull off all of this? You know, I must be something special. I must be connected. And the guy with me that didn't really know me very well at the time turned around and he went, you asked. And it crumpled me. And as I say, it goes through the whole thing in the book. But I realized we don't ask for what we want. You know, if we need something, we'll ask for that. But we don't ask for what we desire. We don't ask more of our standards. We don't ask more of our relationships. We don't ask more of our clients. As long as they're paying, we're good with that. But we don't demand more from them. And so I suddenly started changing and adapting. And first thing I did was I went around to all of the big players that I've ever worked with. And I went, hey, do you remember I got someone on that walk-on role? Do you remember I got a drum lesson with Guns N' Roses? Do you remember I went back rooms of the Vatican? just curious, how did I manage to pull that off? And every single one of them said, well, you asked. And there's an old Wayne Gretzky, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. I've got a similar saying. I get an automatic no for every question I don't ask.
I love that. That's excellent. Write that down, everybody. And then that'll motivate you to answer the question. Sorry to cut you off, but that, bam, right there. That made so much sense to me. Sorry about that.
But it wasn't supposed to. Again, this is stupid, simple shit that people decide to ignore and overlook and overcomplicate. And if you just ask, you actually dare the chance that you'll get it. And I didn't realize that happened.
So sometimes they're afraid that they're going to get it, though. That may be the issue, too. Do I deserve it? I mean, that's another psychological thing.
That's that little devil. Yeah, yes. That's that little devil in the back of your head that you got to start dealing with and realize that it's not a case of, you know, oh, I don't know what to do. It's a case of, well, why can't I have that opportunity? Why can't I sing on stage like you? Why can't I stand on my own stage and sing? Why not me? Why shouldn't I do that? The second you insert that why into that doubt, it becomes a clarification and an authority to push you to do it. Mm-hmm. So when you start going, oh, I can't do that, slip that why in there. Why can't I do that? Why can't I have a better relationship? Why can't I have a better car? Why can't I have the clients that I want rather than the clients I'm getting? Shove that why in there and you'll find a lot of things happen.
There's another story in the book that I think people need to hear this because it really affected me this weekend, because sometimes I settle for less and it's standards. If they make you an old fashioned that you freaking hate, that's crushed ice, you send it back. Most people, including myself, sometimes, especially me, I'm an Italian, so I love espresso. So it's like 50-50 when a waitress brings it over to the table that it's total shit and it's not short. And sometimes I'll just say, hey, I don't want to cause a ruckus, but you taught me in the book to be really polite, be genuine, say, hey, listen, this is really not to my standards. This is not the espresso that, you know, that I want. Can you make me something better? And I've shied away from that from the better part of my life. But the last few weeks, after I read, I'm like, you know what? He's absolutely right. Can you share the story? And I think for a lot of us, we don't want confrontation. But this doesn't have to be confrontational. This is just you're a paying customer and you want it to your standard and your specification.
I love an old-fashioned. And for me, it has to be a bourbon old fashioned. Now, some people do it with rye. So I will express I'd like a bourbon old fashioned. And it's got to be done with a decent bourbon. It's got to have a large cube of ice in there. It's got to have a decent brandy, cherry, and a slice of orange. There's really not a lot that you can do to screw up an old fashioned. But when you suddenly see them shoving a bunch of ice in there, like it's a Jamba juice, or they stick half a pile of fruit in there, you know that they don't actually know how to make the drink. So at that point, you can go, excuse me, that's not how I like my old fashioned. I'll actually get a different drink. Thank you very much. You don't have to be rude about it. But if you get a bad espresso, your lukewarm fries, just even bad service, you can turn around and say, excuse me, I don't know what I've done to receive this, but that's not how I would like to continue with. So can we adjust this and start again, please? And be firm about it. And one of the stories I had in the book was that I took a friend of mine over to a steakhouse when he was in town. I was on the motorbike. I never touch alcohol when I'm on the motorbike. But he was in an Uber, and he went, Aaron, you're one of them. I'm going to have an old-fashioned. And the old-fashioned that was delivered to him was basically like the eyesore that I just mentioned to you. Loads of ice, half a chunk of orange. It was disgusting. And I looked at him, and he looked at it, and he took a sip and put it down. And I went, is that good? And he went, no, not really. And I went, okay, the next few seconds dictates how you settle for anything. If your standards are, hey, I'm going to wear bad shoes, what does that do to the rest of your outfit? If my standard is I'm going to take on bad clients, what does that tell the planet that you're willing to accept? So I said to him, this moment dictates how you settle and where your standards lie. He said, you don't have to be rude about it. And the guy came over and he said, is that a good, everything good? And he looked at me and he went, actually, I'm sorry, but this isn't how I usually have an old fashioned. Is there any chance of something? And he looked at it and he went, we got a new barman. He doesn't know how to make it. I'll sort you out. And he went off and he did another old fashioned. It came totally different drink. One block of ice, slither of orange in there. Just it looked. And I went, and he took a sip and he went, that's beautiful. He wasn't rude, but he held to his standards and he got a good drink. But more than anything, he defined what he was willing to accept. And you need to be able to do that, whether it be in a level of an espresso, a alcoholic beverage, cold fries, whatever. Be in McDonald's, get cold fries. Excuse me, these are cold. I'd like a fresh. Just demand more of you, and then you'll find everyone else around you suddenly gravitates to your standards and not the other way around.
Another story pops in my mind, everybody, before I wrap up the show. Steve goes to a hotel. He has a mixologist making him a drink, and the drink is amazing, and his experience is amazing. And I think your friend stayed at the same hotel, didn't have the same experience as you. And if you want to elaborate on that story before I wrap this up, because I think this, you took a chance, and the guy actually came up and said, I don't really know how to make it that way, or I'm paraphrasing. Can you want to try the way I make it? And you said it was an outstanding drink, and that was the experience that we're all trying to strive for in business.
Yeah, so I went to a hotel in San Francisco. I had a speaking gig that afternoon. I just got off of a long flight. I was pretty tired, needed to pick myself up. I asked the guy, can he make a drink? And he challenged me. He said, well, I know what you're saying. I know what you want, but let me try something different for you, which isn't always the best thing you want to hear. And he came over and he made the most amazing. That man, by taking a shot, listening, conversing to me, actually made an amazing drink. It suddenly opened up my opinion that this was a fantastic hotel. Now, when I was with my friend later on that evening up on the roof deck at another bar, I told him what a wonderful hotel it was. And he went, are you shitting me? And I went, no, it's absolutely fantastic. I said, I had this drink. I had this. This guy came. It's absolutely brilliant. He went, order a drink now. And I got this girl came over that seemed as though I was bothering the crap out of her. She worked there, but she really didn't want to work. And I was like, can I get it? And then I got the drink and it was horrible. And I realized that my perception of that hotel had been based on the first gatekeeper that I had seen. And I realized he hadn't met the person I had. So his perception was basically her. And I got to thinking, who is your gatekeeper? Who is the first person? Very, very rarely will a client get to speak to you first. There'll be someone in between. It could be your Instagram feed. It could be your website. It could be your auto message. It could be your newsletters. Those are the people that set the tone of what your company is. If they're bad, they're meeting bad gatekeepers and getting a perception of your company before you've had the chance to deliver the right one.
I love that. We say in Jake and Gino, it's people, culture, and systems. I think that's the three things that you need. And that's what you discuss in that. So as people are listening to this, they may say, what is the relevance to multifamily and to investing? It is totally 100% relevant because we're talking about building a brand. We're talking about building a customer experience. We're talking about building the portfolio and being able to scale it up. You don't build a portfolio. You build people to help you build a portfolio. And that's what Steve is talking about throughout this entire book and throughout the Bluefishing and throughout this entire episode we have right here. I want to really recap this whole show for everybody. And you have a 16-year-old bricklayer who speaks to his grandpa and gets the shit scared out of him and says, I can't be here anymore. I got to leave. He becomes a bouncer. He doesn't really take a big step up in life. No offense. I mean, you're not going.
No, it's true.
You're not going to become a CEO or anything. But hey, it's a step up. You've got to feed the family. And from there, you see psychology and you start asking, can I? You start asking these questions and you start getting things done. One thing leads to another. And then all of a sudden you start building a business. And then all of a sudden you start meeting Elon Musk and you start putting people together and you start delivering true value. Never losing the curiosity that you have and always asking questions. And that's how you build a business. And that's how you build a brand. And that's how nowadays you've written two amazing books. Let me hold them up for everybody. It's Go for Stupid. And once you read that, go out and pick up Bluefishing. And I would say Steve's going to leave all his contact information on here, but I would definitely go look at the website, see all the offers that he has, because there's true, tremendous value. And if I can say it, wisdom. There's a lot of years there and there's a lot of experience, a lot of battle scars there, but that's great. That's what you want. That's who you want on your side, telling you what to do and how to do it. Someone who's experienced it and gone from, a tough life early on to, creating massive success and massive impact.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, thank you very much. I hope it helps people.
Where can the listeners get a hold of you?
I'm very easy to find. I'm Steve D. Sims absolutely everywhere. Instagram, Twitter, whatever. Steve D. Sims. I'm even stevedsims.com. Or if you want to find out directly about this book, even type in gofortupid.com.
Steve, it's been a pleasure interviewing you. I hope we do this again because I love this and continue the relationship. And please, everybody, go out there, buy the book, read it, enjoy it. You could probably knock it out in 2 days, but the stories are timeless. I mentioned at least 10 stories in the show, and they're a lot of fun. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's inspiring, motivating, and it will help you, I think, at least change the paradigm of the way you're looking at business and conducting business. So once again, Mr. Steve Sims, Gino checking out here, and we will all see you soon. Thanks, everyone.